Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People. Today's episode, we interview Daniel Pludek, who's the CTO at Kit McGrath Educational Centres. We talk about Daniel's education today. He's done a couple of university degrees as well as some short courses, as well as a growth into a CTO role. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People. On today's episode, we have Daniel Pludek, who is the CTO of Kit McGrath Educational Centres. Welcome, Daniel.
Thanks, James. How are you?
I'm very good. Mate, I think you're relatively new to the Newcastle scene. For those that don't know who you are, can you give people a bit of an overview of who you are and your career to date?
Sure. As you mentioned, I've been in Newcastle physically for about 3 months. I've been working for Kit McGrath since August of last year. Prior to Kit McGrath, I spent approximately 2 years as CEO and CTO of a billing solutions provider, which was grown to acquisition. Prior to that, I spent approximately 18 years working for a range of mid-size and large organizations, and that included approximately 10 years in the US and Canada, working across most of the large insurers from both a software and infrastructure perspective.
Nice.
Also spent a bit of time in Silicon Valley as well with a couple of startups, but decided to move back to Australia approximately 10 years ago, and I've grown my career from there.
Nice. I'm super interested in the US move. I'll dig into that in a second. But if you will, all the way back, what got you into technology to begin with?
Funnily enough, I started studying microbiology at university. Really enjoyed the maths and sciences. However, noticed there were no real jobs in Australia, and especially back then, the only real jobs are available overseas. When I started looking at other areas where I can apply the maths and science skill set, technology stood out. So roughly halfway through my second year, I changed my majors from microbiology to IT and finished off my degree with the IT focused, and then went on to honours in IT.
Nice. Out of university, where did that take you for first job out?
First job out was as a DBA for Aon. Absolutely hated the role. I just could not stand sitting at a desk all day looking at code and understand why figures were off by 0.0001 somewhere in a database. Yeah. So I did that for about a year, and then moved into a professional services role with EDS, where I was able to work on a much broader range of technologies.
Nice. Did that role also have any customer-facing element?
It was customer-facing, so I was based on customer site, initially at Colonial Bank, helped with the technology merger when they were acquired by Commonwealth Bank. Through that contract, I was offered a full-time role with EDS, and that took me to Ericsson, General Motors, Commonwealth Bank, and then overseas, where I worked on Xerox transformation in Canada, which then led back to General Motors in Canada, and then roles across the US.
All right, I'm going to go into that US bit in one sec, but you just may mention something there. That purely technical role, moving into a role that's got a customer-facing element to it, My gut feel is the people I talk to that get those higher level positions up in the C-level management and then C-level positions in technology have that really strong people element and that communication part to what they do, as opposed to being purely technical. Do you think exposure to that in an early role for you helped in that growth?
I think you need to have a breadth of skills. Having the customer facing skill set does help with the growth because it does teach you how to deal with different stakeholders and how to communicate and how to communicate with non-technical people. I found coming as an introvert and from a technical role, the ability to listen and understand helped a lot, especially in customer facing experiences. So I found even in my early roles, I'd inherit the problem customers because I'd sit and try to understand what their actual problem is and work through that problem with them. And that would normally turn them around. So I think, technical or not, doesn't matter so much. It's being able to understand what is that problem you're trying to fix and then leverage what you have available to you as far as skills, experience, other people to be able to resolve that issue.
Yeah, and that's technology as a whole, right? It's an enabler, and the technology itself, whatever platform you're using, whatever code you're writing in, the bigger solution and, you know, what is that problem you're solving is the issue, right?
Oh, exactly. And Google's made life easier over the last 20 years, whereas 20 years ago, you'd have to figure stuff up for yourself. Whereas now you can find queries, half code you're looking for, answers, other people's experiences. So that shared experience makes that technical expertise less relevant. And that's why it's a softer skills combined with technical expertise that are much more important if you do want to progress.
Yeah, nice. I think, roles like that early on in somebody's career where you get exposure to solving customer problems and those communication, the opportunity to listen, have those conversations, understand what problem you're trying to fix, go a long way in helping people's technology careers grow.
Absolutely. And I find the variety in those kind of roles keeps you interested because you never really know what problem you're going to deal with week in, week out. So it feels like a new role all the time. You're constantly learning and developing. Whereas if you do the same thing week in, week out, you become stale.
Yeah.
And I've seen it in large organizations where people have been in the same role for way too long and they really lose their edge and effectiveness. So the variety really does help.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the conversations I have with people about somebody that's been in the same organization for a long period of time, I think you can still have career success and continue that growth if you're changing roles within the organization or exposure to different roles, different teams within one organization. I think where people can get stuck is being stuck in a very small niche within one organization for 10 plus years. It becomes very difficult for them to then jump into a new organization, exposure to new tools, new systems, new teams, new problems. That becomes a real challenge.
Absolutely. Once you stop developing, you stop learning, it really is time to start looking at that new challenge so you can continue. Everybody's got their own drivers, be it personal hobbies, career-wise. So not everybody wants to move up professionally, but once you stop learning and stop being challenged, it becomes much harder to wake up in the morning and go to work.
I completely agree. Well, that's a nice little tangent there, mate. Back to this US story. So Canada drove you then to the US, and you mentioned some startups in Silicon Valley. I'd be super interested to hear a little bit about that.
So EDS being a large organization at the time, I was able to move around quite a bit within their global organization. I then moved to a subsidiary called Solcorp. Now, Solcorp was purchased by EDS. They specialized in policy administration software. I somehow passed the actuarial exams that were required for the consulting role, and by default inherited North America as a primary consultant. So what the role entailed was managing customers such as Prudential, MetLife, going into the organization, understand how they set up their tables and their rule structures, and basically work out a plan to migrate them from their legacy COBOL systems to our new product. That then led to help develop training materials, help the sales team, and work with larger parts of the organization. So it was good skill sets that I was able to develop. Spent a lot of time traveling back and forth between Toronto and various US cities. HP then acquired EDS, and the environment was a bit unstable, so I started looking for another role, and then ended up getting a role with another company, but did a very similar role. So Canadian-based company, couldn't sell their product in Canada because it wasn't bilingual. So I was then managing all of our customers in North America and customers such as AXA, ING, so large insurers in their head office. And that was running professional services, so project management, business analysis, make sure the customers were happy. Then that led to working with the pre-sales and sales teams because I was able to develop quite deep product knowledge, and I was probably the only resource at the time that knew the entire product suite very, very well. So it allowed me to be quite adaptable. And that really exposed me to a lot of organizations and other startups in the industry in North America, which did lead to a new role when I decided to come back to Australia. I landed a role with a Silicon Valley-based organization that wanted to establish themselves here. Got sent back to North America, which kind of defeated the purpose of moving back to Australia. Did about 6 months. It wasn't quite the right role for me. So I ended up resigning, coming back to Australia, and then started working for some larger organizations after.
Yeah, nice. Wow. So that's the US story that brings you back to Australia. And then you were in Melbourne to start with?
In Melbourne to start with. First role was with Optus.
Yeah.
It was a very loosely defined role at the time.
Yeah.
But Optus just signed a large contract with ANZ to replace all of their infrastructure globally. I was handed 99 contract breaches as a start of my role. Managed to work with ANZ in getting through that, which then opened up opportunities to move into the head of delivery role.
Nice. And then we've moved into the C-level role since then.
Took quite a few steps since then. So after that, I moved on to an insurance company where I helped build the technology governance model, renegotiate most of their vendor contracts. Went to a mid-sized organization after that, and spent quite a lot of time in Asia. So Bangkok, Hong Kong, some managed teams in Singapore and China. So I only had one Australian-based resource.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed the role, exposure to a lot of different cultures, a lot of different ways of working. And it was an interesting organization because it was in the clearinghouse, smart card, gating type technologies. Finished up there, went back to ANZ. I had an opportunity because of relationships I was able to build while at Optus. Spent over 3.5 years at ANZ helping with their audit and risk and compliance programs, turning around the delivery in those areas, helping with their strategy, working with very, very large budgets. It was a very successful role where we turned around one of the most challenging divisions to being one of the best performing divisions for accurate delivery, as well as help protect ANZ. So I manage the DLP program for them, their social media strategy, so some of their large programs.
Nice.
Once got that under control, I then moved on to Energy Australia, where I initially started off managing reporting, data and governance, but then moved to a chief of staff role, which was that first exposure to the real executive level roles.
On that note, what do you think the biggest skill that you would have had to learn from moving up that chain to getting C-level? Is there a skill in particular or a learning in particular that you think is most important?
I think the biggest learnings are, A, you have to be confident. If you're not confident in your ability to do something, nobody's going to be confident in you.
Yeah.
Listening is very, very important. So the more you listen, the more you understand. And if you understand, you can then address challenges and take on the work that other people don't want to do or can't do. So I find the biggest opportunities and the biggest jumps I've ever made has been taking on the problems that have been lingering for years, getting them fixed, which then drives that exposure. And I found it doesn't matter what role you start at in your organization, if you can fix their big problems, you'll move up quite quickly.
I agree. When you're moving into the C-level roles, I'd be keen to get your opinion on the importance of staying technical. I don't mean technical where you have to be the person writing the piece of code, but technical enough to be able to have relevant conversations with the technical people of your, you know, within your teams. But keen to get your opinion on that.
I think, as I mentioned before, having a breadth of skills is the most important aspect, because I've worked for some brilliant technical CIOs who couldn't engage their peers or the CEO or board well, and that caused a lot of issues. I've also worked for CIOs who have no technical skill set whatsoever, which means very strange decisions were made in terms of strategy and approaches. But having that technical aptitude, technical understanding, understanding where the market is going, and still being able to have the technical discussions with your own teams whilst being able to translate that into business terms for the business is absolutely critical. Look, I've managed development teams. I've never been a developer. So since I left university, haven't written a line of code, but I still need to know enough to be able to understand issues, challenges, technology selection, how that can impact strategy, why you'd take one approach over another approach. So that technical understanding is still critical in CTO, CIO roles.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I completely agree. And as you said, building the respect for the team up, having somebody that knows what they're talking about. Again, don't have to be the person writing the code, but need to understand, you know, why we're using particular technologies. I think it's super important.
And you can't be an expert in everything. So having a good basis on everything is good. And then you have those experts that you can dive into the detail with when you need to.
Yeah, nice. And that sort of gets us to our current role. And you're in the CTO role with Kipgara. Can you talk to me about, you know, what appealed to you about this opportunity?
It was an interesting one because with every role, you never really know what you're getting yourself into until you start the role. The education industry is one that's always fascinated me because everybody learns differently, and education really is the key for people to do well, regardless of if you want to go to university or want to do a trade, but understanding and having that solid basics will help you longer term. So working in a role where there are tangible outcomes and, you know, we can see that children are being helped was a big motivator for me. My previous role was issuing electricity bills to people. Nobody likes to get an electricity bill. Accuracy is important, but no one wants to see it.
Yeah.
So a role where I can see those tangible outcomes was very attractive. I also read a lot last 5 years of ASX releases, so I had a broad understanding of where the strategy was going and I could relate to the strategy. So the role's quite appealing from where the organization wanted to go.
And I think that education space, COVID affected a lot of industries, education being one of them. I know that the business model originally was built around a lot of face-to-face education, and COVID obviously affected that. How do you think, I guess, the technology influenced the change today, like right in the middle of the COVID or a little bit post-COVID now? How do you think that journey and going forward, that technology, potential of online learning is going to affect Kipmagra as a whole, the business model, the edge?
So Kipmagra was very insightful in they were already building the online platform prior to COVID. So when COVID did hit, there was the online platform available. So the impacts were not as deep as other industries. Mm-hmm. Moving forward, the online learning, face-to-face, apps, there's a whole range of opportunities. It's really about understanding what the customer wants, how they learn, what do they need, and then being able to cater to their need. So I think COVID was one thing. There's always going to be a place for face-to-face. There'll always be a place for online, and there will be other methods and mechanisms moving forward. So it's really understanding how best to help the kids learn and provide it in a way where they can access it and making it as accessible as possible.
Yeah, cool. I think we had a chat with Anthony, the CTO of the university on the podcast quite a while ago now, and we're talking to him about education, not at children level, but obviously at university level, and how hybrid approaches might be the way of the future, where it might be not a full university degree, but a university degree with added smaller courses, some part delivered online, some part delivered face-to-face, and that sort of hybrid approach or tailored approach to the individual. So it sounds like you're taking that same approach at a child level, right?
Absolutely. It's at the end of the day, it's about getting the best outcomes for the student. Everybody interacts and learns very differently, and you need to be able to cater for as many of those people as possible. And you know, even university is a great example. Back when I was at uni, if I missed a class, I'd have to go find a friend who actually made it to the lecture, get their notes and try to catch up. When I went to university in Canada, it was a bit better because the lecturers wrote the book, so you read the book, you didn't really have to turn up to class. Whereas now you can do it online, you can do catch up, you can watch videos, you can go to campus if you want to, you don't have to. So those options make it much easier for people to learn, and that's what we're trying to capture.
Mate, while we're on the topic of education, education I think is an interesting topic for technology professionals. What used to be common and on every job advertisement was must have degree is changing and evolving. Education obviously has a place in society, and university is a big part of that. Let's start with your experience. You've obviously done a couple of degrees now and gone back and then done different smaller courses as well to continue your education. I'd be keen to get your opinion on the value for, let's start with the value for university for your career.
Look, value of university is a funny one. It's very valuable for that checkbox where people require a degree. As you mentioned, it's less important these days, but a lot of roles still want you to have that little checkbox. Yeah, I've seen roles where they want the master's checkbox. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the best candidate. It's just somebody who's had the time to do a master's degree. Personally, I really don't care if somebody's learnt themselves, they've done a degree, they haven't had time to have a degree. It's really about, can you get the outcomes and are you good at what you do and do you have the right attitude to learn and continue to develop yourself and move forward? So I think it's good that it's becoming less important as a requirement, but I think until the entire business world changes their mindset, there are still roles where it will be limiting if you don't have a degree, regardless of what that degree is.
Yeah, cool. You must have seen, I'm assuming, I'm making an assumption here, but you must have seen some value in it to obviously go back. I know you've done smaller courses with Charles Sturt University and also Harvard. Can you talk to me about, I guess, why you did that and then the value you got from that?
I do the short courses because they address a specific interest or a specific need. So if there's an area I do want to delve a little bit deeper into, the short courses are a good way to just go in and brush up that skill set. I also like looking at a lot of the certification streams because what it does, it gives you a good insight into industry best practice, standards, what other people are doing. So I don't see it as necessary. I think what you do in the workplace is much more important. The experience you gather from real world experience is more important, but it's also valuable to be conscious of what the industry is doing. And you know, if you go to a course and learn one thing, you've got your value for money out of that course. So it's just about staying relevant and understanding the trends. The problem with courses and the problem with degrees are they're designed for what to do in perfect world situations, and no company works in a perfect world situation. So the formal education aligned with an ability to use common sense, adapt, adjust, you know, change tact and approach when needed, will get you the right outcome. So it's a tool along with your other skill sets.
Yeah. I think one thing that's come up on the podcast in previous conversations is university teaching the ability to learn. And you may have mentioned of it before, people coming into a role and being able to learn on the role and being able to adapt. Have you found that as a beneficial part to your education?
Look, I still remember when I started my first job, I had that oh shit moment because nothing that I learned in university was applicable to that job at all. And I had no on the job training. I got handed a 1,000-page book and say, here it is, go for it, which is probably not the best induction process either. But yeah, I believe over time, universities and formal education providers have understood that they need to work with industry better, and that may have changed. But there is still a bit of a disconnect between what you do learn and what you then need to apply in a job. And it's a combination of the two that are required.
Yeah, I know from University of Newcastle perspective, they make a lot of effort to integrate their education with industry, with programs like Working Integrated Learning, but not only that, but involving the industry within their courses. So I definitely see that's a growing trend, and again, a necessary trend, because what you learn in a book isn't necessarily what you see in a business.
Exactly. And a lot of the time, the lecturers are taking a very academic approach, and they haven't spent a lot of time in business either. So it's very hard for them to teach what is current in business. In North America, what I really liked was a co-op program where students after their second year will go spend a year within an organization and learn skills. And when I was working for the startup in Toronto, we would actually hire a lot of those developers who'd come on board because they were eager, they wanted to learn, and they were performers. So the benefit for them was they worked for us for a year, they went, finished a degree, they came back to a job.
Yeah.
And it really benefited all parties.
I agree. And I've seen different variants of that, both in Newcastle and elsewhere, on those sort of those either work integrated learning or the internships and things like that. Again, you got the right attitude there. It's a big leg up in, you know, landing that first role.
Absolutely. I just prefer internships pay the students or the time. What they do, because they are turning up, they are doing a full day's work, and a lot of time, after a few months, they're just as effective as somebody who is getting paid.
Great. Mate, outside of formal education, is there any other forms of education either you've personally done or seen successful?
Absolutely. I spend a lot of time on YouTube and Google, not watching gaming videos, but actually looking at topics. So you do learn from other people, other people's experiences, etc. So it's always a good, valuable resource. If you're curious about something, want to learn about a technology, you've got a strategy in mind, but you want to validate it, it's always valuable to spend a part of your time looking at the market, looking at what other people are doing, looking at what people are saying, and just keep that research going.
Yeah, I completely agree. I guess YouTube and Google are the absolute wealth of information, right? And you can dig quite deep. You can get down a rabbit hole, really.
Oh, absolutely. And you could probably do a certification these days just by watching YouTube videos. You'll pick up enough knowledge, enough pointers of then where to look when you do want to research it. But yeah, the providers of those formal education need to get better, because there's a lot of free, valuable information out there.
Yeah, I completely agree. As a tangent here again, you're in a full-time CTO role at the moment, and I see you're also involved with out-of-the-box IT.
Yes.
Can you give me some context around that?
Out-of-the-box was a startup about 2 years ago focusing on cybersecurity, more specifically around the advisory and audit remediation portion of it. They've subsequently moved on to be distributors for certain products where products are good, they're doing well overseas, and they have no entry into the Australian market. What I liked about it was twofold. So one, investing in it means I had to improve on my cybersecurity skill sets to make sure my money is going to be well invested, which is actually what triggered the CISSP and the other Charles Sturt courses.
Yeah.
And then the second aspect is the people running it and doing it really understood their, they know their stuff, which gave me confidence to fill that gap, especially in the mid-market. Most of Australian businesses are mid-market organisations. They don't have buckets of money. Everybody's targeting the tier one. And what I liked is they were targeting that mid-tier market in a cost-effective fashion to help the smaller organizations meet regulatory standards as well as best practice, because there are so many standards globally for cybersecurity and data privacy that mid-sized organizations just don't have the legal power or a CISO or enough skill set within themselves. So this way they had a nice niche to fill that gap. But yeah, you know, I don't take investment very lightly, but it did help me significantly improve my cyber skills, despite having applied them at ANZ and other places, because I did have to do my due diligence.
Nice. I guess that sort of brings you to another topic, which I talk about with a lot of tech professionals, is a side project or a side hustle outside of your day-to-day work and the value that can bring back to your core role. So obviously you're CTO by day and by night, and I guess the role probably doesn't stop, right? But you having a side interest from that security perspective and involvement there definitely would help your role at Kit McGraw, right?
Absolutely. So by looking at the side hustle and understanding what best practices, not just in Australia, but absolutely globally, I'll then able to use those same concepts and principles at Kit McGraw and understand, you know, based on our organizational risk and strategy, what is that right size standard, and then also help Kit McGraw develop those policies, procedures and practices without necessarily relying on somebody else, because I was able to gain the experience on this side. So although I'm not actively involved in doing any work, I still make sure that the people who are doing everything to best practice. So it does help me quite a bit in my day-to-day role.
Is it something you'd recommend for I guess, tech professionals throughout their career to have something or to stay, I guess, technical or have a hustle? Or...
Look, it's not about a hustle or technical. I think the more you can learn and the more experience you have, the more valuable you become for an organization. And I've worked across various industries. I think I've got almost all of them under my belt. So, and every industry has a slightly different focus. You know, some you're developing solutions, taking it to market, others you're just running BAU, others you're working with vendors because it's heavily outsourced. But by having interests in other areas allows you to bring that into your current role. And you know, Bison is a great example where, you know, we are probably more secure than other comparable organizations because of those skills. But you know, I've also brought significant software development experience from other places and was able to apply those principles. So it just helps bring the broader skill set and broader experiences back to your data.
Yeah, nice. And I think what you mentioned there, I think there's a lot of transferable skills, right? Industry to industry. You take something out of one industry and apply it to another one. A lot of those core principles are the same, and you don't need to have learned to just be an industry specialist in one space, right?
No, it's actually funny because I have a debate with recruiters quite a lot, because a lot of organizations want people of industry specific experience, whereas I see the industry is technology.
Yeah.
I'm in IT. IT can be applied across every single other industry. So it shouldn't necessarily matter if I have never been in banking prior to a banking role, because reality is the technology problems are very, very similar. It's about understanding the problem and then working away the best way to fix it. It doesn't matter if the business is doing something else day to day. Technology is that enabler for the business.
I completely agree. I think you can help avoid groupthink there as well. From, hey, this is the way our industry or this is the way our company's always done it, bringing in a fresh set of eyes, experiences from another industry and being able to apply it to a different vertical can really have a lot of success. I think it's the same thing with building diverse workforces, right? Trying to bring people of different backgrounds together, you can definitely have its advantages in avoiding groupthink and avoiding that. This is the way we've always done it. This is the way we have to do it.
Absolutely. Look, diversity of thought is critical for any team. If your whole team has the same thought process, you're not going to get any innovation at all. And you know, prior to August of last year, I had no education industry experience. What I do have now is I understand industry quite intimately. After 6 months, you really have a good understanding of how the business works. But what I can do is bring in best practice from the other industries, be it banking, be it development, be it payments, be it clearinghouse, and all of that does help build a robust business.
Completely agree. Now you are up in Newcastle, and then COVID's affected this. What have you learned about the Newcastle technology scene today? Do you have any opinions on? Let's start with there.
I hear there is a Newcastle technology scene. To be fair, I've only been in Newcastle since January, so I haven't been able to experience the scene yet. The skills of the resources here are very good. Trying to hire good resources that are available in the market is difficult because it seems like everybody has a job and they don't typically like leaving them. But from a skill set perspective, there's a good level of skill set here. As far as the industry or how dynamic the industry is, I'll find out probably in the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think it takes time, right? And again, COVID's had an impact on that as well. Events and meetups obviously haven't come back the way they were before. When it comes to that, again, talent, your thoughts on how COVID and now remote work will affect technology teams going forward? Is remote work something that your team's buying into?
Absolutely. I've got some of my team coming in once every fortnight or so, but there's no mandatory requirement to come into the office. I've actually got a very remote team now. So I have staff members in Geelong, Ballarat, Sydney, Central Coast, as well as Newcastle. The benefit, I think, is being the changing the mindset of organisations where you can find the best talent regardless of where they may be. And some people love coming into the office. Other people prefer to work remotely. People have family obligations. As long as you focus on the outcomes, I really don't care if somebody's on the beach drinking a pina colada, as long as the outcomes are met.
Yeah.
Big supporter of the remote working, but personally I like going into the office.
Yeah, I think we're still figuring that out and learning, right? People that have gone fully remote are enjoying it, some of them, and some of them are wishing for that more face-to-face and more of a hybrid approach. So I think it's an evolving space as people sort of figure out what works for them. And then the people that were fully remote and got forced to do that, whether they'll set up to actually have success and do that correctly or have that same productivity.
Look, I think the challenge is setting up that support network and the structure where if you're remote or in the office, you still have that ability to communicate and integrate with the team. So most organizations, we're heavy users of Slack, Teams, actually pretty much every tool in the market. But what it does, it allows us to have the groups and communications and face-to-faces. You know, we still run our daily stand-ups where we all discuss where we're at. So, you know, the main commitment is 15 minutes, 9 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
We're all together face-to-face. So you still need to build that team culture. It just becomes a little bit more challenging where you're not all physically in the same location, but it is absolutely doable.
Nice, man. You mentioned tools then. If we swing that back to more of an individual focus, are there any software tools or productivity tools that you use to keep your day life managed?
Look, my biggest productivity tool is coffee.
Yeah.
After coffee, look, it's a combination. So I live and die by my calendar.
Yeah.
I need to know what I'm doing, when, where, prepare for my day, the day before, etc. From a talking to the team, managing people, managing expectations, I find Slack and Teams probably the two biggest time savers.
Yeah.
Where I can just shoot somebody off a quick question, get the answer quickly while in a meeting. Communicate the answer quickly in that meeting, send very short questions, updates to a broader group. So I find a lot of those instant communication tools are extremely valuable and probably the biggest change I've seen in the last few years.
Yeah, nice. When it comes to following people of reading information. We've mentioned Google before, and you've spoken to me before the podcast started a little bit differently. Or not differently, you take a different approach to some people. Rather than following individuals, you spoke about following topics. Can you provide me some context on that?
Yeah, look, everybody's got their own perception of the world and how businesses should run. So following specific people, I find you don't get that breadth of opinions to then be able to make your own opinion. So I rather focus on gaps in my knowledge, things that I'm interested in, trying to understand who's doing what where. So by being broader gives me multiple information points so I can then make a decision. Whereas if I follow just specific people, I'm just getting their view on anything, which is a very limited view of the world.
Yeah, nice. So instead of following a particular podcast or a particular book for one person, you look at a breadth or across cross-section.
So I will just see who is discussing that topic or who's got a trending topic going, and I'll listen to as many different views as possible.
Nice. Maybe if we have to wheel it back until a younger version of yourself or somebody starting out their technology career who's got aspirations to be, you know, the CTO of a company, could you provide any sort of 1, 2, 3 pieces of advice you give to people?
Yep. Yes, don't listen to others. So especially early on, I was silly enough to tell people I did want to be a CTO, and they're like, oh, there's hardly any roles, you'll never do it. So first thing is just ignore all of the negative people. The second bit of advice is you really do need to have confidence in yourself and take a risk-based approach to everything. So don't be afraid to fail, just chip away at issues and keep moving forward. And probably the third biggest advice is just make a decision. If you make a decision, you can then respond to that decision and it'll keep you moving forward. If you're too afraid to ask questions, ask for clarifications, too afraid to understand what you're trying to achieve, you're never going to get there. And you know, I've sat in meetings where a project manager is giving an update. Somebody asks a very simple question. They can't answer the question because they haven't been confident enough to ask their teams those questions to understand where they're going. So you can't get an outcome if you don't actually understand why you're trying to achieve that outcome and how you're going to get there. So there's no such thing as a stupid question. Just keep asking, and that way you'll be confident in what you need to do next.
Nice. If somebody was keen to ask you a question on that note, is there an easy way that they can get in contact with you? Is it
LinkedIn's always the easiest way. It's the one advantage of having a unique surname.
Yeah.
There ironically is another Daniel Pludek in the world, but he's not in IT, so pretty easy to find.
Nice, mate. I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, James.
Cheers. Listening to this episode of Nui Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.nuitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.